Pain has a face. Allow me to show it to you. Gentlemen, I am Pain.
Here's Johnny.
I see dead people.
I met this 6-year-old child with this blank, pale, emotionless face and the blackest eyes, the devil's eyes.
Have you checked the children?
Have you checked the children?
You are one of us, Michael!
Hi, I'm Chucky. Wanna play?
When there is no more room in hell, the dead will walk the earth.
When there's no more room in hell, the dead will walk the earth.
Good morning, Vietnam, and good timely greeting to you, dear listener. Welcome back to another installment here at Play It Again, Kyla. You may be able to guess after having listened to that slightly different intro there that today is another special episode here. We're doing our first spooky season installment here at Play It Again, Kyla, and I could not be more excited about the discussion that's going to be had today. I have a very special episode coming up for you guys, so be on the lookout for it. It'll be coming out on Halloween. I know that Halloween is not a typical post day for Play It Again, Kyla, but we've got something really special coming. But before we could get to that special episode, we first had to do an installment on the film of the hour here today. And so if you've glanced up at this episode title, you are aware that the film of discussion today is The Blair Witch Project. So that gives you a little bit of a hint as to what our special episode is going to be about on Halloween. But rather than ruin that surprise or spoil anything else, I think that we just need to jump on in and have our discussion of the hour for today, dealing with the Blair Witch Project. I'm very excited about the guest I have on today. So without further ado, let's just go ahead and dive on in, shall we?
And I just want to apologize to Mike's mom and Josh's mom and my mom. I am so, so sorry, because it is my fault. Because it was my project.
The search of the three missing Montgomery College students continues in Frederick County tonight.
10 days and thousands of man hours have been unable to produce any clues.
We have a few leads, a few other options we want to take advantage of and just try to put together some pieces to this puzzle.
Do you believe the occult may be involved in the disappearance of your son?
I am so scared.
So, here today to be my color commentator on our extra special Halloween-themed episode of Play It Again, Kyla, is a special guest, MJ. Introduce yourself.
Hi, I'm MJ, and I'm a 19-year-old Taurus.
I'm a 22-year-old Taurus, so that works out. That works out. Our birthdays are 2 days apart, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty neat.
Pretty close, mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm pretty sure that Blair's is the day in between ours, too, so now we have, like, one person for each day.
1, 2, 3.
Yep, nice. So glad that we worked that out here,
yes,
on the podcast. So, for those of you who are listening at home, you're definitely aware that the movie at hand for the day today is The Blair Witch Project, which is a movie that Mackenzie and I rewatched together just the other night, so I think we have a lot of thoughts about it. But before we get into those, MJ here has actually never been a guest on the show.
No.
And so she's got to answer my standard getting to know you questions.
Oh, yeah, so definitely.
Are you prepared, MJ?
Yes, I am prepared.
All right. So my first question for you is, what do you consider to be the greatest film ever made?
Okay, so that's a hard one. I would have to go, don't hate me for this, maybe Interstellar. I like The Conjuring, but it's not like the best, you know, film ever made. I like Interstellar because I like long movies that keep me interested. And I just like space, time, you know, science-y stuff.
I don't think you need the disclaimer, like, don't hate me or anything. Like, I think a lot of people like Interstellar.
I just saw a Twitter thread that, you know, it said, if you like Interstellar, don't talk to me. So, you know, that's why I put that little disclaimer.
I like Interstellar.
Yeah. It's a good movie, and the acting is great. Movie.
And the cinematography is really good, too. Like, it's got some really powerful images.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah.
So my next question for you is, what's the film you've seen the most times and why?
So growing up, I always watched movies in the back of my mom's car because she had those little TV screens.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know why or how this movie happened to be in our possession because it wasn't really popular. I don't even know. Did it have a movie trailer? Maybe. I don't know. It was called Stick It, and it was about a gymnast. It was PG-13. I watched it from, like, my entire childhood. It had some language in it, which was, you know.
Shaped you into the person that you are.
Yeah,
today.
Pretty much. but it's not a good movie, but it's pretty much a comfort movie for when I was a child, so. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, that's very valid. Do you know what my comfort movie that I watched in the back of my mom's van on
what?
The was? The Spider-Man with Tobey Maguire.
Oh yeah.
That's like,
oh yeah, that was in the top 10 100%. Oh yeah.
Now I understand that it's not the greatest superhero film ever made, but at the time I thought Spider-Man 3 was the greatest thing ever made with his like emo phase and him dancing.
Yes. Oh my goodness. And like, yeah, the emo phase with the hair is my favorite part, and then he does like the finger guns with the girl.
Iconic.
He does the hair thing.
I literally cannot take Tobey Maguire seriously in any role since that. Like, nothing he's done. Like, watching Brothers, all I see is that sequence. Or, like, Great Gatsby. Like, I just see emo Peter Parker.
Did they really dye his hair for that movie?
I think they did.
Do they think they did?
I think they did. I don't think that's a wig. Gosh. It looks.
Yeah, it looks pretty weird.
Yeah, it's
real.
Too bad to be a wig, I think. So, anyway, so moving on. MJ, do you prefer to see movies in the theater, or do you like to watch them more at home?
I would have to say at home, because I don't have to overpay for food or bring a ginormous bag to stuff my own food in. Especially, you know, the pandemic doesn't really work.
That's true.
But overall, I would say at home. Yeah. It's cheaper. And
My answer on my first episode was also at home. I will say, though, the pandemic has made me reevaluate just how much I do like seeing movies in theaters.
That's true, yeah.
Because, like, now that I can't go see a movie anytime I want in the theater, it's made me realize that, like, oh, there's something missing.
That's true. Like, if I would go see a movie in a theater just for, like, the fun of it, like, you know, going out with your friends kind of deal. But if it's something like, I really been wanting to see this movie for a long time, I'm going just for the movie. Yeah, I would go to the theater for the experience, but if I'm sitting down wanting to pay attention to the movie, I would watch it at home for sure.
I like how you differentiate that. Like, if it's the experience, then you're in the theater, but if it's just for the movie itself,
yeah, 100%. 100%.
Yeah, that's interesting. So what is your earliest movie watching memory?
Probably Snow White, just because I feel like it's always a Disney princess movie, pretty much. I mean, it's not an ideal movie to watch because, you know, Snow White was like 14, but...
yeah, there are some issues there.
Yeah, you know, but I'd probably say Snow White, so yeah.
I feel like it's interesting, every person around our age that I've had on the pod so far, they always have a Disney movie for that response. Like,
oh, yeah.
Everyone has, like, their Disney movie of choice from their childhood that's what they remember. Mine was Lady and the Tramp 2, Scamp's Adventure. I have very vivid memories of, like, buying that VHS and watching it over and over.
I don't even think I've ever seen that one.
You know, you've never seen that one?
No.
Have you seen all the different, like, sequels, right? Like, the direct-to-video. Like, have you seen, like, Little Mermaid 2, Return to the Sea and stuff like that?
No. I've only seen the Cinderella ones.
We're having a movie night, and we're watching all of the... Like, they're not good.
Like, the weird...
They're weird. Disney paid, like, $3 to make them, and, like, spent zero time on the plot.
They got the interns to animate
Exactly. But they were a formative part of my childhood.
Yes. Okay.
So,
okay.
We'll watch all those soon. And then, finally, on my general getting to know you questions, what is a movie that you think everyone should see at least once in their lifetime?
Shrek 2, definitely. I like Shrek 1, but the animation's a little off, but it was made a very long time ago. Shrek 2, it's just a classic, and it's one of the only sequels that are better than the first.
Mm-hmm.
it's just overall, like, well made, well animated for the time, and the jokes are always so funny. Mm-hmm. Always
the hero sequence, the holding out for a hero, that is, I
cultural
think,
reset.
Yes, a cultural reset. I think it's the greatest use of a song ever in a film.
Yes.
Also, I'm gonna go on record as saying "Far, Far Away Idol" is my favorite bonus feature ever on the DVD ever.
Yes, it's, I used to so watch funny. It. Yes, and I used to vote. Like, didn't they have the little vote thing? Uh-huh. You can, like, who was your favorite? Like, that's the best. Uh-huh.
And if you voted for, like, a person that, like, wasn't good, then, like, Simon declared himself the winner. Yes. Remember?
I can't believe they actually animated Simon Cowell. They actually did the chest hair and everything. I know. Oh my goodness.
That was so iconic, though. I love that video. I want to go watch it as soon as we get recording.
Yes. Me too.
So now I have a few, like, Halloween spooky season specific getting to know you questions for you, MJ. So my first one of those is, what's your favorite spooky film?
Okay, so I have a set of films. The Saw movies are very interesting to me. Mr. Saw the Doll, John Kramer, I think that's his name. I think the traps and how big-brained elaborate they are, I think that's really interesting to me. A lot of people don't like gore. I like it. I know that sounds pretty sadistic, but I like how they were, I don't know. It's just, I just like how they were made in, like, the dark, like, grungy kind of dingy style is very intriguing to me, so yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right. And then my next question is, what's a movie that always puts you in the Halloween spirit?
Okay. One of the worst animated movies of all time, Scary Godmother Halloween Spooktacular. I want to be Scary Godmother. That's who I want to be when I grow up.
Like, not just for Halloween.
No,
like,
in life. I just want to be Scary Godmother. The most the weirdest thing about the movie is their eyes. I don't know what's up. The little protagonist, little girl who has the little tutu thing, she has normal eyes, right? She has the whites and then she has the pupils. Everybody else has just little tiny black dots as eyes. Like the older kids, you know, the little antagonist devil boy. He looks evil. Like, he's terrifying. I don't know. My mom bought me that movie a very long time ago when I was a little kid, and I watched it every year ever since then. I think it's a very interesting
It obviously movie. Has scarred you.
Yeah, like, pretty much. Yes. Yeah, I feel like everybody who's watched it as a kid has, like, mental illness now. I mean, honestly.
This is the origin point of everything that's wrong with our generation. Seriously. I never realized just how prominent of an effect Scary Godmother had on our generation.
Yes.
Until recently, like this Halloween season, she has come up in conversation multiple times.
Yeah. I feel like that's the one movie everybody knows but doesn't want to talk about. So.
I feel like it's the Halloween equivalent of, did you ever watch that really horribly animated, like, direct-to-video Christmas movie, Grandma Got Run Over by a Reindeer?
Of course I did.
I feel like that
one
somehow.
Too. Yeah, that was the Christmas version of this one.
Can we do an episode on that for Christmas?
Yes, we have to. We got to do that. We got to do that.
So my next question for you, MJ, is what's the most scared you've ever been while watching a movie?
Okay. Let's see. I get scared by anything that deals with demons. Like, ghosts, slasher movies don't scare me. Like, gore doesn't scare me. I'm not fazed. But demons? Oh my gosh. I don't know why. Like, it terrifies me. In the Sinister movies, to be exact, I watched the first two Sinister movies when I was back to back. It was on the same day. Like when I was like 15 maybe. And then I had to walk home to my apartment at the time, by myself in the dark. And I was thinking that freaking, the masked demon guy was going to come get me, even though I know he wasn't real, but I don't know. Just the idea of the guy possessing little kids to murder their entire families terrifies me. So, yeah.
I'm going to agree with you. I'm going to go on record. I don't play with demons. I just can't.
Yeah.
So I agree with you that, like, witches, ghosts, vampires, like, insert whatever monster here, like, they don't scare me. Like, if anything, I end up finding movies like that usually funny somehow. Like,
yeah.
I find something
except
to laugh
for witches.
Yeah.
This episode.
Blair Witch is something else entirely. But, But no, demons. Mm-hmm. And I think it probably has something to do with, like, my spiritual upbringing. You know, my mom's a pastor.
Yes.
And so
the
realistic aspect of spiritual mm-hmm. warfare just is something that I've been trained not to mess with.
So yeah.
Demon movies always get me more so than any other, like, monster genre.
Probably because they're just so real.
Yeah.
Because I think, of course, demons are real. And I feel like, you know, they can come into this world, and it's like, because, you know, vampires aren't real,
mm-hmm.
and it's like, you're not gonna be, you know, killed by a vampire. But I don't know, it's very scary, like the Annabelle series.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, I don't know why it freaks me out. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, I'm not bothered by dolls. I can have a bunch of dolls in my mm-hmm. room and sleep,
mm-hmm.
but like the Annabelle movies just freak me out.
And like, on that same subject of like the fact that things that could be real are yes. often scarier. Like, I think that's why I enjoy and am scared by, like, thrillers more than, like,
yes.
horror.
Yes.
Because, like, the notion of, like, someone stalking me or, mm-hmm. like, kidnapping me, like, that's actually, like,
yeah.
could happen. So that's so much scarier to me than, like, any supernatural mm-hmm. entity.
Like, you know? The Strangers movies.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, those are scary.
I also, the movie that scared me the most, I know it's not me answering these questions, but I just want to say this out loud because I was the most ridiculous child when I was like 8 or like however old I was when it came out. I saw that mm-hmm. movie Disturbia with Shia LaBeouf, where it's like his neighbor, he thinks his neighbor is a murderer and he's like under house arrest.
I don't think I've seen that one.
It terrified me. And so I recently watched it again, like in the past couple of years, and I was like, what was it about this movie? But I mean, I was scarred. It might have
oh
just been
gosh.
Shia LaBeouf, you know?
Yeah, Shia LaBeouf is terrifying mm-hmm. in as itself, you know?
Actual human cannibal, Shia
yeah.
LaBeouf.
Yeah, yeah, pretty much. Like, even the Transformer movies were terrifying.
That's true, they were.
He scared me because of his accent, his hair, his facial hair. He's short. It scares me.
All right. This is turning into a Shia LaBeouf hate show
I know.
For some reason. My next question for you is, what is your favorite movie monster?
Oh, I would have, it's not a monster, but I would have to say the Saw doll, because it's iconic, you know? You got the little, everybody's the Saw doll for Halloween, you know, back mm-hmm. in the early 2000s. And his little tricycle, you know, is scary, but it's iconic, mm-hmm. you know, and that it's not like a real possessed doll. I don't know. I just think it's cool how they made that.
Mm-hmm.
I might be wrong, but I think it's,
it is a very iconic, like, aesthetic. Now.
Yes, yeah. definitely.
Mm-hmm. And my final spooky season getting to know you question here, Mackenzie, is we're talking about the Blair Witch Project, but mm-hmm. you know, when you talk about Blair Witch, you inevitably got to talk about Scooby-Doo at some
yes,
point.
Yes.
And so, because, you know, Halloween puts me in a Scooby-Doo mood, I wanted mm-hmm. to ask you, what was your favorite Scooby scare as a kid?
I was obsessed with the Zombie Island movie. I've always loved zombies. Zombies are great. I think it's, you know, zombie movies are just so interesting to me, but I think the origin of it all was Scooby-Doo, Zombie Island. Mm-hmm. Because when they're eating the crawfish and they came up out of the water, that was just so good. I love that. And the big house and, mm-hmm. I don't know, I really liked it.
I think that's the only Scooby movie that actually scared me
yes!
as a child.
Yes! Like, I actually was like, oh, okay. That's kind of, you know,
because the bad guys were real. Like, mm-hmm. it wasn't a mask. Like, they were
yes.
actual zombies, you know?
Yes. Oh, I know, I hate to, like, be, you know, this isn't, you know, part of it, but I was talking to Tyler, my boyfriend, the other day, and I asked him, there was this one episode of SpongeBob that scared me to death as a child, mm-hmm. and it was the procrastination episode, you know, where he starts with, like, the,
yeah,
you know,
he writes the,
do you remember how the clock was like, time's up, SpongeBob, and the racer shavings, and the
uh-huh.
chair's like, come sit down, it's comfortable, and his house burns down. Yeah. They erased that. They cut out the entire scene. And they put something, like, stupid in there.
What?
Yeah. I'm dead serious.
And this is not, like, Mandela effect. Like, this
no,
is real.
Like, it's real. They cut out the scene. Like, if you go and watch SpongeBob, you have to, like, it's, like, season 2, episode, like, 17, I believe. But yeah, I'm not even joking.
Of all of, like, the scarring things that SpongeBob aired for them to change that, like, come on, hash-linging slasher, anybody?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Nosferatu coming in at the end, that terrified me.
Oh, yeah, and, like, they have the dead body and everything.
Honestly, though, the scariest thing to me on SpongeBob was the episode where Sandy left them to pet sit her, like, caterpillar, and it turned into the butterfly.
Yes! Oh, my gosh! That's what made me scare a butterfly.
Me, too. That was traumatizing. Like, I still don't like moths or butterflies. Yeah. Like, they still kind of bother me.
I know. I just had to bring that up because I was thinking about it, and I feel like others would want to know about that.
Maybe I should add best SpongeBob scare to the list of
questions. Yes! There's a bunch.
SpongeBob was scarring. Yeah. It really was.
It was.
So now let's shift into specifically talking about the movie of the hour, The Blair Witch Project. Okay. So first I want to ask you, Mackenzie, about your experience watching this film. So can you remember the first time you saw it, what your reaction was at the end, and about how many times do you think you've seen it since?
Okay, so I watched it about a few years ago. I don't remember exactly when, but I remember it was illegally. and I have watched it about 3 or 4 times since then. So it's a good one. I like it. It's very good.
So I think I saw this for the first time probably around my freshman year in high school. Like, I feel like that's around the age when, like, you're usually exposed to the Blair Witch Project is, like, whenever you enter high school.
Yes.
Because that's when, like, I don't know, it's just got such a, like, it's such a phenomenon of a Halloween movie.
Yes.
You know? And, like, so if you're hanging out with people, like, that's the movie you want to watch around Halloween time.
Yes.
And so I remember when I got into college, I think I've watched this movie probably almost every Halloween since then. So when I went to college, my first Halloween away from home, my friends and I were like, what movie should we watch?
You know, yeah.
Get us in the spooky mood. And we were all like, let's watch the Blair Witch Project.
Blair Witch Project.
And so it became our tradition, you know, like every year around Halloween to watch it. So it's a movie that puts me in the spooky mood for sure, in the Halloween, Halloween season mood. So before we, like, dive in and really start parsing out our discussion here, I wanted to offer some behind-the-scenes fun facts about the making of this movie. So maybe I'll impress you with some of these, Mackenzie. We'll
maybe,
see.
Maybe.
So my first fun fact is one that I feel like gets mentioned a lot in conversations about this movie, but it's that this movie appeared in the Guinness Book of World Records for the biggest budget-to-box office ratio. Because it was made for such a cheap amount.
Yeah, wasn't like, what? $3,000
I think that, like, total, like, even with, like, everything done in post-production, it came out to, like, $30,000, like, total, and then it made, like, hundreds of millions of dollars.
Oh my gosh. I bet them actors are just sitting in luxury right now.
So the budget to box office ratio is just absolutely insane.
Yeah.
And so it's pretty neat. And then the fact that this is something that also gets talked about a lot with relation to this film, but I feel like it's not something that I feel like it's something we take for granted now because we can't really imagine this working this well, but the promotional campaign for this movie was insane, and it the promotion required the actors to lay low because the film was presented to the public as actual found footage, and
that's
so
crazy.
They filmed, like, little TV adverts of, like, actors as police officers, like, holding press conferences about these missing teenagers. And so Heather Donahue's mother actually received condolence cards because people genuinely believed her daughter was missing or dead.
Oh my gosh. Just imagine being that person. You can't go out and hang out with friends because,
like, you just gotta chill in your basement for a few
seriously months. Like, what?
I guess the payday was probably worth
it.
Yeah, I hope
definitely.
So.
Hopefully.
But since you said that about, like, I feel like that you were like, I think the actors are probably living in luxury. I'm wondering, like, what their contract specified for, like,
that's
their,
true.
Because, like, I hope they got a good deal out of this. I hope that they actually earned a
what
percentage
they deserve
instead of just, like, a base salary.
Yeah.
You know? Like,
I don't promise this much. Nothing.
Hit us up, Heather Donahue. Let us know how much you made. For
this. Seriously. I would like to do an interview.
Yes,
definitely.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So this project was actually originally conceived back in 1993 when Daniel Myrick and Eduardo Sanchez, the directors, were film students at the University of Central Florida.
Okay.
So they spent years, like, crafting, like, the mythology behind the
witch
story and everything. But they knew from the beginning that the intent was always for the dialogue to be mostly improvised. So they made like a 35-page script treatment, but it didn't include dialogue. It just included, like, this is what's going to visually be shown.
Scenes and stuff.
So the casting call requested that actors with strong improvisational skills come audition. So Heather Donahue was reportedly asked to respond to the question, "You've served 7 of a 9-year prison sentence. Convince us that you deserve parole." Like, that was her audition.
That's crazy. Mm-hmm. That's very interesting. You don't hear that every day.
And then Josh Leonard actually believes that he was primarily cast because of his ability to use a camera. Like, he knew how to handle the camera. And so Heather Donahue, conversely, had to be given a 2-day crash course on how to manipulate and use the camera prior to filming. So I think that's interesting. Like, imagine you get a job just because you can use the camera. Like,
true. Not just because you're acting, you know.
Right. Who knows if Josh could improv? Which I will say, though, Josh has some pretty funny lines. So, like, he's pretty good at the improv, I would say. Several of the names within the Blair Witch mythology are near anagrams. For example, Ellie Kedward, which is the name of the woman who, you know, was ostracized from town supposedly for being a witch.
Yeah.
That's an inversion of Edward Kelly, a famous occultist and medium.
Oh, okay.
And Rustin Parr, which is the name of the child murderer, you know, the man that supposedly murdered the children.
Yeah.
That's an anagram of Rasputin.
Oh my gosh, I didn't know that.
Uh-huh, isn't that cool?
What? They're smart.
Yeah. So for like, all right, good job, Daniel Myrick and Eduardo Sanchez.
Seriously.
Like, you've earned our respect.
Yeah.
So the filming lasted only 8 days.
Wow.
And the actors were in the dark about much of what was going on during filming. So they knew that they were making a movie. Mm-hmm. Like, they knew that they were out there being filmed, that they were acting, that they were improvising. But that was about it. Like, they were just on their own for the rest of it.
Because, like, I noticed when... Sorry.
No, you're fine.
I noticed when, like, if you really watch the movie thinking the actors don't know what's going on, you don't really see, like, you know, oh, the witch... They don't talk about the witch much, except for, like, the first part when they're doing the, quote, documentary, end quote, kind of deal. So, that does make a lot of sense.
Right. So, like, the tent being shaken, for example.
Yes.
Like, the actors had no idea what was happening, and it was actually the directors shaking the tent from outside. The actors were given clues to the locations that they should get to film that day. Via film cans left in milk crates in the woods. So they were each given individual instructions to help their performances, and to add to the tension, they were given less food each subsequent day of filming, which put them all on edge.
They probably thought they were filming a snuff film or something.
They're like, what is happening? Honestly, like, at what point would you, like, start to genuinely be concerned, like, are these two guys who've never made a professional movie before just about to, like, murder me in the woods?
Oh yeah, I would flip out, seriously.
Producer Greg Hale, this is really interesting to me. He used techniques that he had discovered through his prior military training to add to the atmosphere of filming.
Oh my god.
So these techniques made the actors feel like they were being hunted and included harassing them at night and the food deprivation.
Yeah. That's crazy.
The actors also believed that the legend of the Blair Witch was real until after filming was completed. They weren't told that all the stories that the townspeople were telling them were made up. They thought it was all real.
So the townspeople were just genuine actors, right?
Some of them were actors, some of them were just people.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but the ones telling the stories about, like, oh yeah, this man murdered all the children, like, those were actors planted.
Okay.
By the director.
Because it seemed so real. Like, they just stopped him on the street and was just, you know, especially the woman with the baby. And they knocked on that one lady's house. They're like, she was hairy, you know. That was really cool.
That would have been Chinoa's favorite.
Seriously.
So many of the noises heard at night were actually the directors and producers snapping limbs off of trees and picking them up from the ground, breaking the limbs, and then just throwing them into the forest to make noise.
I bet that was so much fun for them.
I know. Like, I think I would like that job. Like,
oh, yeah,
tormenting
definitely.
The actors. I would not like to be the actors.
Oh, yeah.
One of the video cameras that was bought for use by the actors was purchased at a Circuit City. And then after filming was completed, the producers returned that camera for a refund to help their budget stretch further.
I would have done the same thing.
It's like the episode of That's a Raven where she like buys the outfit and like wears it just to return it.
Yes, you know what I mean? I've done that before.
I mean, sometimes you gotta.
Yeah, I mean, I cut my grandmother's hair with shears and I'm like, I'm gonna return this. And I'm like, wait, should I? And then I ended up forgetting and then it was past the date. So.
But the intent was
the intent return. Was there. Yes.
Audiences were originally intended to get a glimpse of the Blair Witch. That was originally supposed to be like, there's going to be a ghostly white figure whom Heather Donahue was shouting at when she was running away.
Mm-hmm.
But during that moment of filming, the camera did not pan around to show the figure.
Mm-hmm.
And so the moment was never reshot.
Okay.
I think that's very interesting. They originally intended to show us the witch, because I think that's one of the most powerful things about this movie is that you never see the witch.
Yeah.
Which we'll talk about that in a moment. But after premiering at Sundance, Artisan Entertainment acquired the distribution rights to this film, and they decided that they wanted a different ending, because the ending was deemed scary, but more so like puzzling and confusing than scary.
Yeah.
So 4 alternative endings were shot, each with different levels of like blood and gore. But ultimately, it was the original ending that was used for the wide release, which I'm really glad that that's the case.
Oh, yeah. It's so iconic. Mm-hmm. So iconic.
And despite only taking 8 days to shoot, it took 8 months to edit the over 20 hours of film footage down to a finished film.
Yeah. I can see that. Because they probably just kept filming.
Could you imagine watching 20 hours of that footage?
Oh, my God. That'd be annoying.
Release the unedited cut. Where's the unedited?
Yeah, seriously. I'd sit and watch it.
For real. I want to see how much like they yell at Mike.
Yeah. Mike!
So now, Mackenzie, I'm going to ask you a question that I ask all my guests to kick off our official discussions of the film, of the episode, which is, what's your pit and what's your peak of watching The Blair Witch Project? What's your least favorite and what's your favorite part?
Okay. So there's not many least favorites. Maybe my least favorite part was how they were, quote, filming a documentary. But I know they're using that to set up the movie, to give that background and all that kind of stuff. But I don't know. It was just kind of like cheesy, but it wasn't. I don't know. They couldn't have really done it in any other way.
Mm-hmm.
And another thing too, I kind of low-key wish there was more like, you know, gore in a way. Not really. A very, very scary scene, for example, when in It Chapter 1, when the what was that one kid's name? Ben. When Ben was reading the book in the library, the librarian was staring at him and would pan over to him reading the book. And then the camera pan over, she's getting closer and you can kind of see her smile. I feel like if they did something like that, that would be kind of cool. But it would take away the whole reason why the movie's so good. My favorite part was the way they showed how like time and space bends in the woods. Your days... The woods seem like to get bigger, you get lost, the days seem longer, nights seem longer, like it would be daylight for 2 days, kind of how time and space bends. And I also like how the Blair Witch is an omnipresent being. She's not really like a person specifically, or just, I don't know, I just like how she's everywhere all the time, which is really cool to me. But yeah, that's pretty much it.
Yeah. I agree that I think the fact that the witch is like a disembodied entity, like she's not like restricted to like, this is her physical form, like makes her so much scarier.
Yeah.
I think that my least favorite aspect of this film, I know that it's essential for the film, but the tension between the three members of like the expedition, especially whenever anyone gets mad at Heather, it always makes me uncomfortable, because I'm like, she's the only girl out here.
Yeah.
Like, I'm a little concerned for her. Like, what are they going to do to her?
Yes.
And so I just, like, I can remember the first time I watched it being like, why is she friends with them? Like,
seriously.
Why does she go out here with
seriously,
them?
Though.
And, like, I know that, I guess, supposedly, like, Mike gets the brunt of, like, most of the hate.
Yeah,
but
pretty much.
But there are a couple scenes where they're pretty rude to Heather, and I'm like, she doesn't deserve this.
Yeah.
Because to me, she's the only one with common sense.
Seriously, though.
So.
Most of the time, anyway.
I mean, like, she did go into the woods willingly, so how much common sense can she have? But so that's a personal pit for me. But then, peak-wise, I think this movie has a lot of solid peaks. When they find the teeth.
That was the coolest part. The stick figures and the trees and stuff, which is really, really cool. I really like that. And I know you mentioned like the tension between the three, but that's one of the coolest parts about it because it's so real.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you're right. That one part I was like, ugh. But it is cool how they made it's just so real. It just seems so real.
Yeah, I agree. And I also, a couple other like little peaks. I mean, it's the iconic image of the part of Heather's face when she's like filming.
That's the best part.
Her little apology when she's apologizing to their parents and everything.
Yes.
But, like that, that's and so the iconic.
Mm-hmm. Oh my goodness.
And then the ending. The ending is probably one of my favorite endings in the horror genre of all time.
Oh yeah, 100%. Like, I just think
that it's
the mystery of it. Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh. Paranormal Activity could never.
Also, them hearing Mike is pretty iconic too. Like,
oh my gosh. And he's already like,
not to make this about Annihilation, but have you seen Annihilation?
I've seen the last part of it.
Okay,
I haven't sat and watched the whole, it was on TV the other day, like literally recently. And I watched literally like the last part of
The scene that always really gets to me in Annihilation is when they hear the voice of
yes,
is her name Shepherd? I might be getting that wrong. I don't know. One of the girls that died. Yeah, she's gone missing, and Lena knows that she's dead, but no one else fully believes that she's dead yet. Yeah. And they hear her voice, and that always gives me Blair Witch vibes. Like I feel like this. They got that.
I watched movie commentaries on like that one, and that they always touch on that topic about how that it's so scary knowing that's a really good aspect of a lot of horror movies that use that as like a quote scare method of like echoing, you know, like a mockingbird kind of what their dead loved one's voice is. I think that's the coolest thing to me. It's just cool.
Yeah, I agree. Didn't they do that in the Hunger Games?
Yeah, pretty much. Uh-huh. Yeah.
So if Hunger Games did it, it's a good horror theme.
Yeah, seriously. I don't know.
That's a joke.
Yes.
But so now that we've each given our pit and peak, I did want us to each mention what we think is the most iconic or best shot.
We probably have the same.
So we probably do. You can go first. I feel like
the part where who hung himself? What was his name?
Josh.
Josh. Yes. When she walks in with the camera and Josh is just sat there and he's hanging. But when you watch the movie the first time, I didn't know he was hanging himself. Like he wasn't hung. Like I thought he was just standing there, and I'm like, that's kind of stupid. But when you watch the movie again, you realize that he's literally sitting there, his body's just swaying. And that's the coolest part because when she's holding the camera, it doesn't, like, directly in the middle of the camera, like, show his body. It's kind of, like, off screen a little bit, and you see it for a glimpse, and then the camera falls. I think that's the coolest shot ever.
Mm-hmm. It ending on the camera falling just is,
And her screaming.
Uh-huh. And there are so many things about this movie that are so iconic but would have been impossible without the structure of the film being what it is.
Yeah.
And without the visual medium being what it is. Yeah. So that's what I actually wanted to ask you. Like, how do you feel about this as, like, a shaky cam, handheld filmed movie? Because there are some people that don't like that. Like, I know our friend Sarah.
Yeah.
She hates shaky cam.
And yeah, so I get it.
She doesn't want to watch Blair Witch Project ever. Uh-huh. And I do understand, like, it can be exhausting, but so many benefits of this film are only possible because it is shaky cam.
Yes.
So I wanted to ask you about that.
So, it depends on which movie. This movie in particular, it gives it character. That's it's like, if it wasn't like a found footage type of documentary, you know, film, it wouldn't be as good as it was. Mm-hmm. I would like to touch on the movie Cloverfield. The first one, the found footage kind of alien. See, that one's more of like a thriller. There's a lot of action scenes. That's why I could not sit down and watch that movie, because it's so freaking shaky. They're running mm-hmm. all the time. In Cloverfield, I mean, not in Cloverfield. In Blair Witch, there's not a bunch of action scenes. They're just standing there walking around. So that's, it really just depends on what it is. Mm-hmm. I know a lot of horror movies, like, turn to that. I get it, Paranormal Activity. See, that one's decent, because they're not running around constantly. It depends on the movie. Mm-hmm. But, which Paranormal Activity it is. But, Gilda. So, I like it. I personally do. I know some people just, they have vertigo, can't watch it. I can. Yeah, that's my take on it.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think it depends on the film. Like, it can yes. be hit, it can be missed. And this movie, it's a hit, because, yeah. And I think that part of that is that this started the trend all over again. Mm-hmm. You know, this revitalized the whole genre of found yeah. footage. And so this film used it really well. Yes. And it didn't use it in a way that made me feel like nauseated or yes. anything. It discombobulated me as a viewer just enough to enhance the story. Mm-hmm. Not so much that I felt removed from or taken out yes. of the story.
Oh, yeah. I was going to add something too. It was done, like, this is probably the only found footage movie that I can sit and thoroughly enjoy, just because, you know, like, when you're watching a found footage movie, I'm like, why do they have the camera on? Like, what's the point? Like, because, you know, like, Paranormal Activity, they film everything. Like, mm-hmm. it's the point where it's like, okay, this is annoying. Or, like, Unfriended or whatever, where they're, like, on FaceTime or whatever. I hate uh-huh. that. I think that's stupid. But with this, they have the camera on to make sure they're safe. And they notice, they're like, turn the camera off. And they do it all the time. Uh-huh. Which, it feels very real. And I hate how that, you know, like, to touch again, you know, they'll have it on, like, okay, why is the camera on? Mm-hmm. You know? And you don't want to have to question that during the movie, you right. know?
But thankfully, this movie, it doesn't take you out
no,
in that way.
No, it's very inversive, I don't know.
Subversive,
yeah. you feel like you're there with them. It doesn't feel like you're watching a movie. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I just don't. I think that's, yeah, like I said, the only movie that yeah. I feel did that near perfect. So
yeah, I agree. And I think that your answer there just very effectively leads into my next question, because you're talking yes. about the realism of the movie. And my next uh-huh. question was going to be, what do you think it is that makes this movie such a phenomenon? And what do you think it is that makes this movie so scary?
One, the budget. I loved how they literally had no budget. I think that's interesting. And everything seemed real. I know I mentioned that before, but, like, in the beginning when we talked about how, like, vampires and stuff like that aren't real, this, since you never see her, mm-hmm. and it's just, like, a presence, and the way the actors acted, the camera, it just feels real. I feel like that's what makes it scary. And the marketing, like we said mm-hmm. before, the way they portrayed the kids as actually missing, I think that's very, very, very cool. And the way they portrayed the witch, like, she's bending time and space. I think that's one of the coolest aspects of the movie and what makes it especially scary. But yeah, that's how yeah. I see it.
So
That's how Sue sees it.
So that you brought up the promotional campaign, which led right into my next question, which was, do you think that this movie reveals anything about the importance of promotional campaigns?
Yes. If they didn't have the campaign that they did, I feel like it wouldn't have done as well as it is today. I feel like now it would be like, I don't know. I guess it was one of the main origins of all found footage movies, like modern found films, mm-hmm. found footage films.
Say that five times fast.
I know, right? Yeah. I just think it's just iconic, because it's one of the only ones that did it near perfect. you know? And like I said before, Paranormal Activity is a very close second, but it's never going to live up to the hype of... It's more like a modern day because they have, like, security cameras or whatever. Right. That was in, like, what, 2008?
The first one, I
yeah.
think so.
Yeah, it was, like, early on, but I don't know. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's pretty much.
I think that I talk about sometimes about, like, what I would like to do, like, when time travel is invented.
Yes.
And this wouldn't really work, because even if time travel is invented, then I would still already remember Blair Witch.
Yeah.
But, like, I would really love if I could, like, see any movie, like, on its initial theatrical release. This is one of the ones in my top, like, mm-hmm. list for that. Because I would just love to have been old enough in 1999 mm-hmm. to, like, get in on the hype of mm-hmm. this and, like, fully give myself over to the promotional campaign.
Yeah, and I bet, like, kids were talking about it in their schools. Like,
right. Oh,
did you hear about this?
You know, this was crazy water cooler conversation.
Yeah.
In 1999
yeah.
to be like, these kids are really missing.
Yeah.
Like, that would, what do you think happened to them? And, like,
yes.
that's what, like, how many groups of, like, teenagers do you think tried to go out into the woods in Maryland and, like, find these
things? Yes,
kids?
Yes.
Like,
and I wish I could bring, like, my mom or, like, someone older who was, you know, either in, like, high school in 90s, you know, who would know, like, what this movie was like, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I don't know.
I think it would be really interesting to know.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Like, to
live definitely.
This promotional campaign. Yeah. So on the subject of the promotional campaign and the actors, and like people genuinely thinking that this was real,
mm-hmm.
When it first came out, I wanted to ask you, in your experience, does the improv always feel authentic in this movie? Are there ever any moments where you're like, oh, this doesn't feel real? Because we've talked about the realism. Mm-hmm. Is that throughout mm-hmm. the movie, in your experience?
Sometimes. It's for the most part, it seems real. Like, mm-hmm. very, very real. Maybe some parts when they're arguing,
mm-hmm.
It doesn't. Because of course the movie was improv, so of
right.
course there's gonna be some parts where they're like, you know,
mm-hmm.
but overall it is. I really like it.
Mm-hmm.
Other than that, it's pretty good.
I agree. I think that in all of like the important moments, it feels completely authentic.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing that doesn't feel authentic to me, and I think this is a byproduct of it all being improv and these being three actors who were portraying characters
yeah.
that are like versions of themselves, but. It doesn't always feel authentic to me that these three are friends.
Yeah, that's true.
I've questioned that. I'm like, why are they together? Why are they
yeah.
doing this? Like,
chemistry.
Yeah, exactly. There's no chemistry. There's no, like, there's no firmly founded relationship
yes.
between them, seemingly. And so
like,
that,
they should have sent them out on a trip to, like, hang out with each other.
Right.
First.
So that has bothered me before. Because there are little glimpses of moments where I'm like, okay, like, these, I'm buying it a little bit more.
Yeah.
But on the whole, I'm like, why? Again, why did Heather agree to go out with these two dudes? And why
yeah.
why did Michael agree to go out in the first place? You
yeah.
know, like, what is the basis for their relationship? And also, like,
mm-hmm.
is it just supposed to be that they're just making a documentary and, like, they haven't known each other that long? Like,
yeah.
what's the deal here? Because
mm-hmm.
that's, without this having, like, the standard plot structure of, like, your typical film, I don't feel like I know these characters.
Yeah.
And there's not a lot done throughout the duration of the found footage to, like, make
yeah.
me feel like I have a glimpse into their relationship. So that's the only thing I would say
yeah.
that doesn't feel authentic to me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm always just like, why did they agree to do this? Like,
yes.
why are they in the
yes.
woods together? They want to kill each other.
Yes.
But in terms of, like, the terror that they portray, that always feels authentic
yes,
to me.
Yes, I agree with that.
Mm-hmm.
That's, like, the most exciting aspect of the movie. It's you're genuinely scared
mm-hmm.
and you feel that they're scared because it's real, like they're
right.
actually scared, but not the witch, you know.
Right. Right. And that leads me to my next question, which is like, do you think there are any ethical concerns about the treatment of the actors?
Only if they consented. I feel like, I know this is really, like I said, sadistic to say, but I feel like the movie wouldn't have been as good.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It wouldn't have been as good. I mean, I pray that they got their fair share of the budget, you know, not the budget, but the
profit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess it just depends on how they feel. Mm-hmm. You know, some people can really be affected by something like that. Mm-hmm. But I feel like, you know, I don't know. I guess I gotta watch interviews and see how they feel as actors to go through something like that.
Mm-hmm. I feel like it could have very easily been, like, a very traumatizing experience.
Yeah.
But also, to me, it makes their performances possibly, like, even more commendable, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Because to know that you're being messed with,
mm-hmm.
like, to that level,
yeah.
like your food is being withheld from you,
yes.
and you don't even know where you're going, and
yeah.
but to still never break,
uh-huh.
because, like, I think after 3 or 4 days,
I'd be like, okay, come on, I'd be
like, all right, Daniel Eduardo, get out here, like,
yeah, like, I'm calling the cops, like, come on, let's go.
Right, so the fact that, like, these actors fully gave themselves over to the
yeah.
realism of the production, like, is really... just
oh,
impressive
yeah, 100%.
To me, mm-hmm. because, like, I would have been like, where's my food?
Where's
like,
that?
I'm coming out of character now. So, like, the fact that and that's what's interesting, too, is that these people were playing characters. Like, even
mm-hmm.
though, like, they're using their real names, I know Heather Donahue said that she based her portrayal on a director she had worked with previously. Like, someone
yeah.
who was, like, always very sure of themselves and trying to, like, boss
yeah.
others around.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's interesting.
She did that
very
well.
Yes, she did. But, like, that's to know that not only are they acting genuinely, but,
mm-hmm.
like, they're having to be other characters
yeah.
and also themselves
yeah.
and coming across 100% realistic.
Yeah.
You know, like, that makes it
definitely
extremely impressive to me. So, I would not want to be them, though, I will
no.
say.
Uh-uh. Mm-mm. I wouldn't either.
Getting their tent shaken in the middle of the night.
That would be terrifying.
And
they're probably not, like, what was I saying? They're probably not used to being in the woods at all anyways.
No.
They probably don't even know where they're at.
That's what, apparently on the call sheet for the audition, it was like, we need three actors who are, you know, adept at improv and are comfortable filming in a heavily wooded area. And I'm like, that's like the understatement of the century. Like,
seriously,
they were just left alone in the woods for 8 days.
Yeah.
Like, comfortable filming
yeah.
in a heavily wooded area.
You don't think 8 days would be a long, long time, but, like, for them,
but
of course it was a long time.
8 days, 24 hours a day, you're not getting the amount of food and water you need.
Yeah.
Like, that's a...
Yeah.
It's a pretty long time.
Because you can tell in the beginning they weren't as, like, they were, like, joking around, having fun. And then near the end, it's like, okay,
right.
they hate each other.
And
like,
also the fact that they legitimately utilized military training
yeah.
techniques. And,
that's the best,
like,
part.
That's so intense.
Uh-huh.
They're like, let's make them feel like they're being hunted.
Yeah.
You know, like, that, it's crazy.
Yeah.
But I agree with you that, although I would not want to be them,
yeah.
and on some level, I'm like, maybe this wasn't the most
maybe.
Humane way to
yeah.
treat fellow humans, we would not have gotten the finished product we did without
no.
those conditions being imposed upon them.
And I don't think there's another movie like that, filmed like that, like, recently after
right.
this one.
Like,
is
not,
there?
Not that I'm aware of. Not
yeah.
that...
I mean, there probably is, but not...
And also, I love the fact that they let them believe that there really was a witch.
Yeah!
Like, that, like, these were
That's
real
smart.
Stories.
That's smart, honestly, because
mm-hmm.
it made them... It's authentic. It's authentic
right.
terror.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah. So it's just emotional terrorism. It's fine.
Yeah.
It gave us
fine.
A good movie.
Yeah.
We're fine with it.
I mean, if they got the money, it's fine.
Right. And that's, I would like to know when they signed on, what all they signed
mm-hmm.
up for specifically, because it, I mean, surely it had to cover all of this. Like, they
yeah.
didn't know specifically what they were going to be dealt, but they knew
uh-huh.
that.
I mean, if there wasn't some sort of contract or something, they probably would have been sued.
Right. No.
There had to have been, like, a NDA or, like, a...
They signed themselves over for emotional terrorism.
Yeah,
that's literally
pretty
what
much.
It says. Like, we will emotionally terrorize you. Sign.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, now I want to ask you, do you think that the juncture at which this film was produced helped elevate the promotional campaign? And by that, what I mean is that this is, like, pretty widely regarded as the first widely released film marketed primarily on the internet.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like the success of that promotional campaign was only possible because of what a new thing the internet was.
Yes.
Like,
yes.
it had, this had to happen at this moment
mm-hmm.
in history and in filmmaking in order for it to be handled as successfully as it was. Because
yeah.
if this happened now...
It wouldn't have worked.
It wouldn't work because we would find Heather Donahue's mother on Facebook and
yeah.
see that there was a picture of her daughter alive and well, you
yeah.
know, or something
yeah, seriously.
Like that. And so do you think that this coming out in 1999, do you think it was just lightning in a bottle, like, perfectly made for that exact time period?
Yes, definitely. Because, one, with the, you know, scary movie phenomenon, you know, like Scream, mm-hmm. Like you said, the Halloween remake, H2O.
Mm-hmm.
In the 90s, scary movies were really widely popular.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, you have the internet, like, coming out, like, really starting to be a thing. You know, everybody can, you know, middle class can, upper class can afford, you know, a computer at their family home. So, but there was a lack of social media like we have now. So at that time, they did it perfectly. Like you said, lightning in a bottle. I feel as if, like, if they did it before, it wouldn't have been as good. Because, mm-hmm. one, camera quality, you know, would have sucked. But the camera quality was perfect because it was kind of like, eh, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But
if it was now,
yeah. But if it was like now, it would have been like stupid. It would have been a, mm-hmm. it probably wouldn't even make a profit if, mm-hmm. it was filmed, you know, maybe 2008 up.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think so wholeheartedly.
I also think that one thing that's interesting that is that the internet campaign really helped grasp, like, young moviegoers.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
High school and college age kids, like, this was perfect for
yes.
them.
Yes, yes.
And so, because they're the people who are, and I wonder curious. If that helped to, like, gear future promotional campaigns,
uh-huh.
you know, because internet campaigns always seem geared for, like, social media ages,
yeah.
and I wonder if this helped set that precedent.
Yeah, you know? I think so, because, like, the Unfriended movies,
right.
they were popular enough to be a meme, but nobody would go sit down and watch the movie because it was so stupid. But everybody knew about it,
uh-huh.
you know, because it was FaceTime. Everybody does FaceTime. Back then, you know, cameras and technology was starting to become real big. I don't know. I feel like that set the, you know, was the basis of everything, you know, marketing, like modern day marketing for us now. Is I feel like it was based off of the Blair Witch marketing,
mm-hmm.
personally. I don't know.
So what is it about this film, do you think, that helped to revitalize the found footage genre?
So revitalize the found footage genre. I think it was so, I feel like, one, it seemed so real. You know, marketing, like we said before. After Blair Witch, Paranormal Activity was a huge, huge success as well. I feel like if the Blair Witch didn't exist, Paranormal Activity wouldn't exist.
Mm-hmm. No, I think that's completely fair to say. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, of course it wouldn't be as, but Paranormal Activity is similar in concept, but, like, they're completely different. Movies, like, you know, we can compare them just because they're found footage, but Paranormal Activity, there's sequels and stuff. Of course, Blair Witch has one, but we're not going to talk about
no,
that.
It's fine.
It's not. We're not going to discuss it.
It doesn't exist.
It doesn't exist. No. But I feel like it is a basis, and if we didn't have it, we wouldn't have the more successful found footage films we have today. I mean, of course, if a found footage movie comes out, automatically we're going to go watch it because, you know, Paranormal Activity, Blair Witch was so good.
Mm-hmm.
So
I think that probably a big part of it also is that budget to profit ratio.
Yes.
Like, because I think that studios saw, like, oh, this is a really cheap way to make a lot of easy money.
Yes, yes.
You know, and so I think, short answer, the almighty dollar had a lot to do with
oh,
it.
Oh, yeah.
But
Blair Witch is purely an accident, too.
Right.
Like, they probably didn't expect to make as much as they did.
Oh, no. Actually, they fully anticipated it to be, like, a TV movie. Like, they thought it was, they were hoping to get, like, a TV network to buy it. And put it yeah. And then it became the most profitable movie. Like,
Guinness Book of World Records worthy.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
So, no, I agree with you, though, that I think that studio saw that it would be easy, and I think mm-hmm. that it's just, you know, the phenomenon of once something is huge, everything else wants to ride on the coattails and,
yes.
like, follow in the
yes.
genre. And so, I wanted to ask you, do you think any subsequent found footage films have ever been able to hold a candle to this one?
I don't think so. Maybe Paranormal Activity could be a close second, but I feel like you can't ever make a Blair Witch movie again. Like,
the sequel proves that.
Seriously. Like, you can't... Fetch will never happen. You know, like, Gretchen Wieners. You know, it's a once-in-a-lifetime kind of movie, and you can't really recreate that.
I think you're exactly right, and I think it's because you can't recreate the realism.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because Blair Witch was so realistic, any other movie that comes after it is going to be compared to it. Mm-hmm. Like, is it as realistic as Blair Witch? And no other promotional campaign is ever going to be able to do what they did.
And they also made a Blair Witch video game.
Yeah.
And I played it, and mm-hmm. I played some of it, and it's really good, and of course... that made money too.
Mm-hmm.
So they just got so lucky. They did at the perfect time, the perfect amount of money, perfect actors, everything. And they just didn't know it at the time, but they did.
Right. But no one is ever going to be able to convince audiences that like what they are seeing is real.
Definitely.
Because
not.
Everyone's going to be like, oh, they're trying to be like Blair Witch.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's not like no one else's mom is going to be getting condolence cards because they really think their daughter is dead.
Yeah. Because now you wouldn't think, like, yeah, you can make a documentary like, you know, like the Chris Watts killings, the mm-hmm. Watts family killings. That's a documentary, but they're not going to make like a movie about it. No, nowadays that can't really happen because that's like illegal, right? I mean,
if someone made a movie about an event, we would all know it's not real found footage because it's a recreation, you know?
Yeah, seriously. And if, you know, we can go on Twitter and look up three kids missing,
right?
You know, we'll find anything just because of how technology has become more modern. Yeah, I'm not going to say it. More modern.
More modern.
Yeah.
I agree. I don't think anything is ever going to be able to do it as well as Blair Witch did. Because Blair Witch did it first. And I think they struck while the iron was hot. Like, they got it at exactly the right time.
Yep.
And any subsequent strike just isn't going to be, it's never going to be as hot.
Definitely.
So, I also wanted to ask you, what is it about Blair Witch that you think makes it so rife for spoofs? Because... come on, there have been some pretty good Blair Witch spoofs.
It was a culture reset. Nobody saw it coming. Nobody saw it coming. And it has so much basis that you can work with to make a parody, you know? Like, of course, the Scooby-Doo. Mm-hmm. You can definitely incorporate the two because they both have so many similarities.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was hilarious.
Mm-hmm.
And just, like... mentions of it in different films and TV shows.
And I think part of it is, you know, you brought up earlier how some of the images from this are just so iconic.
Yes.
Like, the end shot, you know, him being, like, facing the wall and her falling, the shot of her with the tear.
Yeah.
Like, there's just so many images that the second you recreate one of those images, it just instantly conjures thoughts of Blair Witch.
The symbol on the movie poster.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Like, you're automatically going to think, Blair Witch Project, you know?
So it's easily done, you know what I mean?
Yeah, and like if people associate Blair Witch with whatever film and TV show you're creating, you're going to make more money because people are going to watch it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's another thing, too.
And that's every TV show of the 90s did a Blair Witch episode. Mm-hmm. Like, in 1999, around Halloween time, every show. So I wanted to ask, do you have a favorite Blair Witch spoof?
I have to say the Scooby-Doo one
is
just because it's funny, like,
it's so good.
Yeah. I like in the Velma when she's staring, she's like,
at least I try to look feminine.
Try to look feminine. I'm so glad you guys introduced me to that. Other than that, I haven't seen many other ones because I mean, I watch TV a lot, but it's hard to,
So the Scooby-Doo project obviously is iconic.
So
it's its
good.
Own thing, but I'm gonna also have to mention Dawson's Creek did a Blair Witch episode.
They did
and it's
oh my gosh, we'll have to watch
so
it.
Good. Yes, we'll watch it. It's so good. It's like my favorite Halloween TV episode.
Did Glee ever make one?
I don't think so. They were like too removed, you know.
Yeah.
But most teen shows of the late 90s early 2000s had a Blair Witch episode.
Yeah.
So yeah, the Dawson's Creek one, it's up there for me. But it, mm-hmm. like, it actually tried to be scary.
Yeah.
I think the strength of the Scooby one is that the Scooby one was just funny.
Yeah, and it was aimed towards children.
Right. And it ended up being scary. Yeah. But it wasn't trying too hard to be scary. Yeah. You know, yeah. So that was the strength of it. So now I want us to talk specifically about the ending. We've mm-hmm. talked about, we've hit on throughout our conversation, you know, the notion that the mm-hmm. witch is a disembodied entity. Like, she's yes. not just one physical form.
Uh-huh.
So do you think, I mentioned during the fun facts that, you know, initially they planned to show us the witch mm-hmm. in the scene, but yeah. the camera, they forgot to pan.
Yeah, and so, I forgot.
So do you think that never seeing the witch adds to the scary experience of the film?
Yes, definitely. I like movies where they don't focus on, like, CGI and all that crap.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's scarier. The unknown is terrifying. And mm-hmm. when you don't know what happens, your mind can come up with different scenarios on what happens. Because you can think that, you know, Heather died, but your friend might think, like, oh, the witch took her and held her hostage. You know, you mm-hmm. never know.
Mm-hmm.
Like, for example, It Chapter 1, I know I keep talking about it, but the new recreation Chapter 1 and Chapter 2, I did not like Chapter 2 because they showed Pennywise too much.
Uh-huh.
And the first one, they didn't show him a lot, but they showed, like the lady in the background. That's terrifying to me.
Mm-hmm.
Because it seems real. Mm-hmm. With the CGI, I don't like that. I mean, sometimes you can pull it off. Mm-hmm. Some scary movies can pull it off. But especially with Blair Witch, I feel as if it's unknown is better.
Mm-hmm.
100%.
I agree with you. I completely agree with the notion that, like, what you come up with in your imagination mm-hmm. is scarier and yeah. better than anything that can be put on film.
Because you can leave the theater or wherever you're watching the movie at, and you can, before you go to sleep, you're gonna keep thinking about it.
Right.
Because, and then you're gonna tell your friends about it. And it's like, yeah.
And because once you put a visual image to something, then mm-hmm. your brain, allowing your imagination to run wild mm-hmm. forces you to dwell on it longer.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Because, yes. like, if I had an image of what the witch looked like when I thought of Blair Witch, I would picture that and nothing else.
Yeah.
But because my brain runs wild, like, I think about it more in depth.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that this, like, this is also an issue I have, not just with the horror genre, but also with, like, the fantasy genre. Like, I don't like any, like, Alice in Wonderland movies, even the animated one,
mm-hmm.
because to me, like, the strength of Alice in Wonderland is that my imagination creates Wonderland when I read the book.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so the second you put a visual image to something,
mm-hmm.
it restricts it. And so I understand that film is a visual media, and I yeah. love it for that reason.
Yeah.
But sometimes not showing the visual image is the most powerful thing you can do,
mm-hmm.
you know? And yeah. I think that this is a really great example of that.
Yeah.
I also wanted to talk about the unknown aspect of that ending.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I mentioned in the fun facts that they shot 4 alternative endings with
yeah.
different levels of blood and gore, because that was something
mm-hmm.
that the distribution, the company handling the distribution wanted, is they wanted a scarier ending.
Yeah.
But then ultimately they went back to that original ending. So
mm-hmm.
do you think that ending on that unknown note adds to the scary experience of the film?
Yes, 100%. I know I said we weren't going to talk about it, but the sequel or whatever,
mm-hmm.
they ended up showing, like, I don't know what it was. I didn't really pay attention because it was literally the stupidest thing I've ever watched. I think they did it right. It was just terrifying to me because the art and decoration and stuff that they had, like the house and the handprints, was the coolest. You have to watch it a couple times to really understand that the handprints are terrifying because it leads to, and I'm probably not answering your question in full, but the handprints lead into the children being murdered,
uh-huh.
and that kind of ties back the beginning to the end,
uh-huh.
like comes full circle, and it's, that's scarier to me than an image of the Blair Witch.
Yeah.
So mm-hmm. I feel like the atmosphere they created really made it perfect.
Mm-hmm. I completely agree, and I think that, you know, there's something so powerful about the fact that this movie just made an image of a man facing a wall, like, the scariest thing
you've ever seen. Like, you never would expect that, but you can never know. His face might have been, like, deformed. They might have cut his face off,
right?
But you wouldn't know.
Mm-hmm.
And that's so cool to me. Mm-hmm. I don't understand why horror movies nowadays, they focus on jump scares.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only thing they focus on, which it does get to me, you know. Yeah, me, yeah. But I don't want to sit and expect jump scares all the time. I want a...
Right.
It give me chills.
And that's... The thing about the jump scare is, to relate it to humor, even though, like, horror and comedy are kind of on opposite ends of the spectrum, like,
yeah.
The theory of relief humor,
mm-hmm.
Is basically that, like, people want to laugh. Like, you, Steve Martin and Andy Kaufman, really, like, pioneered this idea where they were like, mm-hmm. you know, people want to laugh. They pay to come to our shows because they want to laugh.
Yeah.
So it doesn't really matter what we do. Mm-hmm. Whatever we do, they're gonna laugh at. And so Andy Kaufman would come out on stage and put a record on and just stand there, and eventually people would start laughing because they're like so uncomfortable, but they're like, it's a comedy show, I guess yeah. I'm supposed to laugh. And so I feel like, so like what relief humor, the reason it's called relief humor is because like you get so uncomfortable with the situation or the setup mm-hmm. for the joke or whatever that like laughing relieves you, mm-hmm. like it alleviates the pressure. And I feel like that can just as easily be applied to, like, the horror genre.
Yes.
Like, you pay to see a horror movie because you expect to be scared.
Yeah.
And so, just like when you pay for a comedy show and you expect to laugh, so the funniest thing is actually that they don't try to make you laugh.
Yeah.
Sometimes the scariest thing could be that they don't try to, like, scare you in the most obvious way.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
Because, like, a jump scare... It might get to you in the moment, mm-hmm. but you don't dwell on it later.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It relieves yes. the tension immediately because
yeah.
the thing comes out, the noise is loud, and you jump, and then
yeah.
it's over.
Yeah, you
because
don't, like, think about it.
You've alleviated the tension.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that there's something interesting to that notion that, like,
yeah.
the scarier thing
yeah.
is to not actually actively seek to scare you in
yeah.
the most obvious way.
I agree 100% with that. Just that shot... still haunts me to this day,
mm-hmm.
and I think that's so interesting how they did that. It's just so rare to see that nowadays.
Mm-hmm. People go for the low hanging fruit usually.
Yeah.
They're like...
and they focus on the music score too.
Yeah,
did it have any music?
It's just the footage. Yeah,
see, like usually I like music in a movie. I think it's great, but when a movie focuses only on the music score to make you scared, that's when it's like, okay, come on, really.
Mm-hmm.
But this movie didn't have music. I didn't mm-hmm. even realize because it was so, I was so in, like...
invested.
Yeah.
You're not even thinking about the
yeah.
other aspects.
Because
yeah.
usually when I watch a movie, I'm like, okay, is the acting good? How's the music? How's this, that? I'm sitting here watching the movie. And not
mm-hmm.
a lot of movies can do that for me.
And that honestly might be one of the ultimate strengths of this movie is that
mm-hmm.
you don't focus on anything that you would focus on in a typical movie.
Mm-hmm.
You're not like, oh, is the acting good? Because you're not even aware that it's acting.
Yeah.
You know what I
yeah,
mean?
Yeah.
It's presented as if this is real footage.
Mm-hmm.
You're not concerned about the score, what the score is,
mm-hmm.
what emotions the score is trying to concoct within you, because it's not.
Yeah.
You're just listening to whatever is the footage, you
yeah.
know? And so it takes all of the typical technical aspects out
mm-hmm.
of the filmmaking
yeah.
process.
Mm-hmm.
And so that forces you to be that much more like intimately right there with the story, you know
mm-hmm.
what I mean? Because you're not removed from it by virtue of thinking about the technical aspects. You're just right there with it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
Mm-hmm. So I think that's really interesting consideration.
Yeah.
So I wanted to ask, we kind of hit on this when talking about have any found footage films since this held a candle to this one, but I wanted to go ahead and pose this specific question. Do you think that any other like horror film will ever be able to accomplish what this one did?
I don't think so. Just because it was the perfect time and place, you can add on. A very, 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 it's not close second. That made no sense, but
a distant second.
Paranormal Activity. I know I mentioned this a million times before, but you can't compare the two. They just have one similarity, and it's the found footage.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, there's nothing. I don't think you can recreate something like that.
I think if anything was ever going to do for the horror genre and what Blair Witch did, it would have to be completely different in nature.
You know what I mean? Uh-huh.
Like, it would have to be something that seized on another juncture in, like, our cultural time period.
Yeah.
That, so it wouldn't be necessarily found footage, but this film is not as good as Blair Witch, but a film that I really enjoy that's an interesting thriller, it's called Ratter. Have you ever seen it? It's Mm-mm. got Ashley Benson from Pretty Little Liars.
Nuh-uh, really?
Yeah, but, like, the notion is that, like, she has a stalker mm-hmm. who has, like, hacked into her computer camera mm-hmm. and phone camera and is, like, watching her at all times. And so it's all shot through those cameras. And so it's very interesting to me. Like, I think it's a very inventive style of cinematography. Mm-hmm. It was a risk, you know, to take to film it that way. And so I'm not saying that that's as good as Blair Witch, but that's a film that has stayed with me because mm-hmm. of the inventive style of filmmaking that was employed there.
Yeah.
And so I think that, yes, with there being advents of new technologies and things, there will mm-hmm. be new ways that maybe something mm-hmm. similar to Blair Witch can be done, but for it to be as iconic and as good as Blair Witch, it's going to have to be completely different.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You can't recreate it. It has to stake out its own mm-hmm. little niche entirely.
Yeah. And I'd like to touch on this one movie I watched on Netflix. It's called Veronica, and mm-hmm. it's filmed, it's a Spanish movie. So everything's in Spanish.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's set in either the early 2000s or 90s, but it's filmed recently.
Mm-hmm.
It's about this girl. It has nothing to do with, like, found footage and all that kind of stuff, but it feels real because the actors and actresses, like, they look and seem and act real, because the main girl, the protagonist or whatever, that gets possessed, I don't want to spoil it too much for you, but
you're fine.
She has braces and she just, like, looks like an average everyday, you know, mm-hmm. schoolgirl, you know? And it's very scary because it deals with demons, you know? Mm-hmm. You know, I can't, I feel about that. But, and everybody talked about it because it was like, oh, it's one of the scariest movies this mm-hmm. year. And I watched it 2018 when it came out. I think that's what it was, but everybody talked about it because mm-hmm. one, foreign films are very popular nowadays when it, you know, like K-pop Korean films are really popular, like Train mm-hmm. to Busan, Hashtag Alive, both very good movies, but that Veronica movie, it was just, it stays with me
mm-hmm.
And it's genuinely scary to me. Some others might not feel the same way, but that's how I feel.
I think, though, that we're hitting on something, which is that the movies that stay with you, the movies that you end up dwelling on, the movies that mm-hmm. scare you the most, usually are the movies that are inventive in some way.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, they're doing something new. They're staking out new territory within filmmaking. And so I think that there is a possibility that maybe at some point, something will be made that does for the horror genre what Blair Witch did.
Yeah, definitely.
It's going to have to be a new beast entirely.
Yeah.
You know? So, to wrap up, I'm going to ask you the closing question that I ask of all my guests, which is, is the movie that we talked about a film that you believe is worth rewatching?
Yes.
And how would you convince someone of that fact? Like, what would be your elevator pitch to convince someone that's seen Blair Witch once that it's something that they should watch a second time?
So, I would definitely recommend someone to watch it a different time, because one, when you watch it only one time, you're not gonna really be as in depth as, you know, as a normal horror movie, you know? Mm-hmm. You gotta watch it in different, like, lights, like, aspects. You know, you can go into it thinking it's real, mm-hmm. watch it again knowing it's not real, watch it the third time, you know, looking for, I'm out of breath, looking for all of the, like, things that you missed.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can focus on acting. Because if you watch the movie initially, not knowing what's going to happen, or if you listen to the podcast, of course you're going to know what happens. But if you go into the movie not knowing what happened, you're going to be like, oh, this is kind of scary. But the second time, you're going to be more scared because you're going to pay attention more.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to pay attention to all of the, like, the time and space thing. I didn't get that before when I watched mm-hmm. the first time. I'm like, this is kind of stupid. when you watch it again, you get it. Mm-hmm. Or if you read up on it, you get it. You really get it. Mm-hmm. And that's what makes it scary. And that's what I would say to recommend the movie.
And I think on subsequent viewings, you appreciate what the actors are going through.
And knowing the background too.
Right, right. So if you've listened to this episode, hopefully you've seen Blair Witch more than once listening to this episode so that you can appreciate what we're talking about.
Yeah.
But if you've only seen it once, I really suggest you go back and watch it now knowing that the actors had no idea what they were dealing with.
Yeah.
Because that's a very interesting aspect to consider.
Mm-hmm.
Something else I would like to recommend, to quote Jaron Lewis, everyone should watch this movie at least once with every single light in their house off and the volume at full volume.
Mm-hmm.
Because you hear so many sounds in the woods
when
you have it at full volume.
That's another thing, too. I would recommend full volume or headphones because it's very immersive. Like, you feel like you're there the way they filmed it.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a great aspect of the movie.
Yeah, it's an immersive experience that makes it so much more eerie.
Yes, eerie. That's a good word. That's the vocabulary word for this movie is eerie.
It's eerie. It's got eerie vibes.
Eerie vibes.
It does. So is there anything that we haven't covered that you want to make mention of before we close out this episode?
I feel like we really covered everything.
I think we've covered it pretty extensively.
Do you think we've...
Yeah, I think we've hit it. Our runtime on this episode is almost as long as the movie at this point, so...
Pretty much. Yeah.
So thank you so much for being my guest today, MJ.
Thank you, and I recommend everyone to go watch this film because it's very good. I mean, honestly...
It's a good Halloween watch.
It is. I really think so.
Apparently filming wrapped. I can't believe I didn't mention this. I'm glad that you said that because it jogged this in my memory. Filming wrapped on Halloween night.
What?
Yeah. Halloween 1998, awesome. I think, was like the last night of filming. So like, could you imagine like you've been tormented in the woods
and then Halloween
days, and then like it's actually
and
Halloween.
You go home and everybody's like, wait, hold on.
So yeah, that's a good fun fact.
Yeah. I would have to, I need to go watch their interviews too, if they have any.
Yeah, yeah. This is some interesting stuff hearing them talk about it. I think that Josh has talked, I've heard the most from him about like his experience on the film. I want to know Michael, what he's thinking.
Yeah, yeah. I want to know what they got money-wise, what they got paid.
Heather Donahue, again, hit us up.
Yes, yes, I agree. Mm-hmm. And I'll have to quote tweet this, and if I find out, I'll quote tweet this, the link you made for this podcast, and put how much,
all right, how much they made. All right, sounds like a plan. So this has been Play It Again, Kyla. This is our extra special Halloween themed Blair Witch episode.
Happy Halloween.
Happy Halloween, ladies and gentlemen. As always, if you have suggestions of films you'd like to hear discussed, don't hesitate to reach out. You can find the podcast with the handle Play It Again, Kyla on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. And you can find me personally at Kyla_Z_Percival on Instagram, Twitter, and Letterboxd. Once again, this has been Play It Again, Kyla. I am your host, Kyla Percival, signing off and saying, I voted for Andy Kaufman.